We had a collaboration with some Chinese scientists.
Here we have a vaccine. What is the problem? Get over it.
Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
I hope that it can occur in a civil way. I mean civil in a special way, peaceful.
The biggest question, maybe in economics and politics of the coming decade, will be what to do with all these useless people.
I just see the need for such a dialogue, and I see the need for action. I see the need for a great reset.
We are 1,490 days into 14 days to flatten the curve. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Johnny Anderson, and I will be joined today by Marty Foster. He is joining us via phone from the land down under. He is in Australia, and we are going to get a status update from him. Marty, how are you? How was your trip down?
Well, the trip down was, as you'd expect, from Etihad Business Class. Absolutely fantastic. Other airlines are available, but so far, Etihad's the best one I've found. I am hoping for some kind of kickback off of that endorsement.
Yeah, let's hope we get a sponsorship and some free flights out of that. Yeah, it'd be great.
Yeah, but currently we've just arrived on our fifth flight of the last week in one day, and we're now on the Sunshine Coast in a place called Maroochydore, and that's in striking distance for tomorrow for the Steve Irwin, as in Irwin Family Zoo, or Australia Zoo, as it's known.
Well, that sounds like it's going to be a nice adventure. What's the atmosphere like on the ground there when you talk to the locals and things like that? Actually, you know what? Let's not go there yet. Let's talk about your personal experience. You said the email that you sent me the other day said that your blood was boiling after a few minutes of watching the media and how atrocious it is.
Well, British media is bad enough, but Australian media is so liberal, left-wing. Australian Broadcasting Company, ABC. I've watched just 5 minutes of it, and it was so very anti-Trump. And as you know, I'm not a big fan of the Donster. However, I would still prefer he was in office than Biden any day of the week. But the people here are the ones I've spoken to, at least. And let's face it, most of them have spent all of their lives in academia. So it's hard surprising that they've got that liberal left-wing bias. So, Australia Broadcasting Corporation is very, very left-leaning, liberal, everything you expect from a channel like CNN in the States. And, yeah, it didn't take long for me to get quite upset with the bias. It's like when I'm playing my favorite game, World of Warships, there's always one team that seems to have a bias, as in a favorite child, and I'm quite often the ginger stepchild. So here in Australia, the view on TV, at least TV news, is that the Republican Party is the ginger stepchild in America.
Well, it sounds like it's par for the course, seeing as how the Chinese influence down there has taken hold in a lot of their media. We've looked at that over the years. There was actually something that came out on Fox News. Well, it's the same company, Sky News, down in Australia, and they had actually published a report that I think it was like 1,200 government employees were on the Chinese Communist Party payroll, and the story disappeared within hours. It was gone. So all of that was just buried, and it just disappeared. So, of course, they're going to have a left-wing bias on the media.
I can't
speak. That does not.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't speak for the rest of the country, but certainly Sydney and the area of Sydney that we were staying in for quite a few days, Marrickville, is wall-to-wall with Vietnamese businesses, Chinese businesses, Korean. There's Greek restaurants, there's Italian restaurants, but Sydney itself is not far away from the most diverse city that I've ever been in. But there also seems to be a fair level of integration, not like in the UK where cities are taken over by large Muslim communities that have immigrated and not integrated. Whereas at least in Sydney, there seems to be quite a good level of integration.
Well, I think you could chalk that up to the fact that they are landlocked. And I know that the UK is too, but with the tunnel and the way that the the inflatable boats come across the channel, it's easier to have a mass migration and mass movement of people and an influx. And also you have a system that is unwilling to cope with the problem. So I think the fact that Australia is kind of off on its own and it's remote, I think that plays a big part in it. It's my opinion. But
yeah, but when you look at the people that came across on small boats from Vietnam and are still coming from Southeast Asia to that be the northwest coast of Australia, you've still got heavy naval and coast guard activity out there turning boats back. And as much as our idea of sending people to Rwanda from the UK, they really have got islands out there on the off the northwest coast, which are illegal immigrant detention centres, and they're full. They've got a lot of people still coming into those, but that's where they stop. And then genuine asylum seekers are processed there, and then allowed access to the mainland. I noticed today in other news from other sources that one of our offshore patrol vessels, one of the new ones, HMS Tamar, is off the coast of Fiji helping the New Zealand Navy deal with illegal fishing. It would be much better if all of our OPVs were in the channel dealing with illegal immigration. But, we've got one right out here off the coast of Fiji, British sailors helping with illegal fishing out here. They didn't bother with helping with illegal fishing from Europe that are fishing in British waters still, and all the fuss and bother that entailed. And yet the squadron itself is called the Fishery Protection Squadron.
That's interesting. The U.S. military, the U.S. Navy is actually, and the U.S. Coast Guard are actually doing the same thing down in the Caribbean and down, well, of course, you guys are down there too, and doing the illegal fishing patrols of Chinese vessels that are fishing off the coast of Central and South America illegally. And we've got people that are coming across from Haiti and they're getting escorts as opposed to, actually stopping that.
Well, the seas are a great source of food. And if it's done in a sustainable way, not these great big factory fishing ships that Japan, China, some of the Scandinavian countries are operating, then there's nothing wrong with it. But I mean, earlier today, we were in Sydney, and because we only got back from the interior last night, another flight from Yulara and Uluru, which formerly known as Ayers Rock. But we got back to Sydney, had a good sleep, and then before catching the flight this evening, we've gone to Bondi Beach. You've heard of Bondi Beach?
I have heard of Bondi Beach, yes. As a matter of fact, I think that is the beach I actually told you to relax on and have a nice
not a chance. It's
not a chance.
It's not that sort of beach.
Oh, well, it was a beach, though, that was frequented about 6 months ago by, or excuse me, not 6 months ago, about a year ago by Extinction Rebellion, the Australian wing, of course. They said that they were there to bring awareness to the rising sea levels of Bondi Beach. And we'd actually gone back, Ned and I went back, and we pulled photos from the late 1800s, the early 1900s, the mid 1900s, and then currently. And guess what? All of the water levels were exactly the same.
Yeah, it's quite a sheltered little cove in terms of big ocean swells, but you get a lot of currents coming in, and if that creates nice breakers. It was the narrowest the locals had ever seen the two flags. So yeah. They have two flags on the beach, yellow and red flags, and that's the only area you are advised to swim in. If you're surfing or kayaking, there are spaces further up the beach, and it's a cove, so it's a semicircular cove. So yeah, photographs that I took today, if we match them back to photographs from, you know, 50, 60, even 100 years, I can't imagine there'll be much difference. But what I was going to say was, down the seafront, the shops and the types of food available, there was absolutely gorgeous looking sushi and sashimi. So all the raw fish, the prawns, the tuna, and it's all caught quite locally and in a sustainable way. And I didn't go for fish today. I had a 500 gram ribeye chop, or ribeye, what do they call it? Yeah, I suppose it's a chop. It was still on the bone.
Yeah.
And that with a salad, French fries, a nice creamy mushroom sauce, and it was absolutely delicious. But they have a fish out here called the barramundi in Australia, and it is just about the best eating fish I've ever tasted, and we have been eating quite a bit of it. So yeah, the food here is fantastic. Unfortunately, as I said, the people I've been mixing with are all lifelong academics, teachers, that kind of thing. So they've been exposed to that left-wing bias inside education. And, you know, the way they think, I have to keep biting my tongue rather than have the long discussion with them, because it would just cause animosity. I haven't been going down that route. I've tried to think about recording a few conversations with their consent, but so far I haven't met anyone that I could really get away with that.
Yeah.
So we've got a few days left, so I may still do it. And again, it depends on what part of Australia you're in, because certainly in Sydney, it's quite a metropolitan, cosmopolitan place. Further out into the outback, you might find the more, I'm going to say it, the more right-wing view. But then again, the place where we were to go and see Uluru, a walk around that great big, it's a rock. It's one big rock. It's not a mountain. It's a big rock, and it's very ferrous. There's a lot of iron there, so it's very red. But it belongs to a particular tribe of Aboriginal Australians, and they are given a great deal of respect out there, and many of them are involved in running the resort in terms of the hospitality outlets and driving and so on. While I was there and watching the news, there was this piece about the youth curfew in Alice Springs. And, you know, you've heard me complain before about antisocial behaviour from young people who've got nothing to do with the UK. Well, these individuals also have nothing to do, and they flocked to Alice Springs and have been drinking heavily, getting into lots of trouble, vandalism, sleeping rough, and the local governor has finally said that's it, there's a curfew. So everyone under a certain age is cleared off the streets in the early evening, and if they've got nowhere to go, then they are given beds for the night, but that's it. And I thought, you know, that's dealing with the problem. It's stopping the antisocial behaviour, but I still have a problem with that from a libertarian point of view. I don't know what you think about that.
Well, I found that curfews were counterproductive, and where I've learned that the most was during COVID, if you recall, because everybody was put under a curfew during COVID, and I thought that was ridiculous. But as to the point of putting it on to the younger people, I have to direct that not at the state. I have to direct that back at the would-be parents of these individuals, because when I was a kid, and it wasn't that long ago, and it was not that long ago for you either, I know you have a couple of years on me, but our parents would not have put up with that.
Unfortunately, like I said in my little message to you, when the perpetrator of a problem I won't say, you know, culprit. Well, actually, yeah, culprit is of an ethnic minority. British news, American news, that never gets mentioned.
That is true, yeah. Yeah.
And at the same time, in the news features about the curfew, although the footage showed Aboriginal kids, it wasn't mentioned that the kids that they're actually having problems with are Aboriginal Australians from the various clans and tribes around Alice Springs. So it is an ethnic problem. And so having spoken to a couple of people, it seems that ethnic Aboriginal Australians are the most incarcerated people on the face of the earth. They keep getting locked up, and there's a lack, there's a great lack of understanding about how their oral tradition and their tribal traditions go. And so the policemen are, and women are, white or Asian for that matter, but they still don't understand how the tribe works. And the original problem, sorry, the aircraft just taking off. The original problem kicked off because somebody was arrested for a minor thing, but because they had to go to a funeral and attendance of funerals and the funeral rites that the tribe give to their members have to be attended by everybody, and you just have to make it. So this individual declined being held in custody, was actually shot dead by police, resisting arrest, trying to escape. So that's what kicked off a lot of the influx into Alice Springs, by all accounts. So it's a lack of understanding of how their law, their way of life is, and it's having the white man's ideals thrust upon it. Even now, bearing in mind, we started coming to Australia in the 18th century. So we're sort of 200 years plus further down the line. But these tribes are 60,000 years old. That's what they reckon. They reckon that these indigenous people, their way of life goes back 60,000 years. So it's a fair point to say, what right have we to impose our laws on them?
It is a fair point. It is a fair point. They make the same argument about the Native American tribes in the U.S. So we constantly hear, you know, the same thing.
The problem comes, of course, with alcohol or drugs.
Yes. Yeah, it's the same.
So when you've got a culture that even if you half that amount and take a conservative estimate at how old their cultures are, in that time, they didn't develop any way of brewing beer or distilling spirits. There may be natural plants and stuff that might give them some kind of high, but they tend to be taken in ritualistic ways. They call it dream time, so that they get in touch with their ancestors through, I don't know, I wouldn't know what they use here, but in South America, is it ayahuasca?
That sap from the tree there that they call it medicine. It's basically, it's a very, very powerful, one of the most powerful hallucinogenics on the planet.
And you know, I've been in the company of people from Fiji who are in the United Arab Emirates, people from the embassy, the Fijian embassy, and they've got a mild, I don't know what you'd call it, but kava it's called, and it comes in a powder form, and they grind it into water, and they sit around, and you get this mass hysteria where people convince themselves that they're as high as a kite. But the stuff itself, all I got was a slight tingling on the lips. Maybe I've done too much hard liquor in the past to be affected by it.
Well, I think you just touched on it right there. You said mass hysteria. It's, you know, and GP has actually spent a lot of time in South America, and he's got a lot of people that go down there and do this thing, because they have actual resorts now in parts of Central America where they do this, and you have like getaways, you book those things, and you go through all that stuff. And it's more, the way that he described it, he said it's more, because you have to be in a group, it's more suggestive than it is actual experience of, you know, going through it yourself kind of thing. So it's more of a suggestive kind of thing. Yeah. So that's where your mass hysteria plays in.
But because they've got the excuse that they've drunk kava, the Fijians let their inhibitions go, and, you know, lots of singing. We were sat on rugs on a friend's, an Australian friend, as it happened, on his lawn in his big villa in Abu Dhabi. And there was a guitar, there was a keyboard. People had, you know, like noisemakers, like shakers and stuff. And we just sat around singing songs. A lot of it was Neil Diamond with, what's it called? I can't remember the name of the song now. But the, you know, those sorts of things. And everyone's just sat around having a good time. This isn't happening with alcohol in Alice Springs. The kids are getting drunk and they're smashing places up. But it's down to, you know, the local authority. And they have started to take action now, maybe a little bit too late, but better late than never, to, you know, to build facilities to keep young kids, whatever their ethnicity is, occupied and sporting events. I mean, that's how most Australians get through their youth, by doing sport, 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 sport. You know, rugby, cricket, Australian rules football, soccer, surfing, all these kind of things. And I think that's why they're such a great sporting nation. I'm not just bigging it up because I'm here, but, you know, I've known a lot of Aussies in my time in the armed forces and my time out in the Middle East. And now it's good to get here to see what made them. And they're a great sporting nation. And certainly their indigenous people should be allowed to be part of that. And I think that's what they're aiming for with some of these new projects within areas like Alice Springs.
How bad was your jet lag? Are you still dealing with it?
Do you know what? Because the lovely lady that we're staying with in Sydney looked after us so well, because we had decent flights, I haven't really felt it.
You'll feel it on the way back.
In fact, yeah, we've got a 7-hour stop in Melbourne before hitting Abu Dhabi. So we've got to fly from Sydney to Melbourne and then wait 7 hours in an airport. Thankfully, it'll be in the lounge before we get on the plane to do the 13-hour stretch back to Abu Dhabi. And then from Abu Dhabi, it's another 7 hours, 6.5 to Heathrow. So, yeah. I've just dropped my phone. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, still hear you. Yeah. One other question I was going to ask you. How much longer? I know you said you got a few more days. How much longer are you going to be down there?
Yeah, we're back next Thursday.
Oh, I see. Okay. I thought you were down there for at least 3 weeks. Maybe I was mistaken.
No.
Misunderstood.
We could have been, but we found that when we went to Catalonia last summer, a week for us was long enough away. There was no way we were coming to Australia for just a week. So we decided to come for 2 weeks. And we have fit quite a bit in. I mean, we've still got a few days to go. Still got a show to see, a comedy play to see at the Opera House in Sydney.
Yes,
when we go back to Sydney.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You asked me if there were any tips that I could give you before you went there in case there was an incident. I told you to join the Australian State Security Services so you wouldn't be shot.
Yeah, I don't.
It's a joke,
think,
of course. Yeah, for our Aussie listeners, that was a joke.
Of course. Yeah. I don't think. I'm really hoping there won't be any problem because again, the places to things are expensive here. But actually, when you consider we're right in the center of the city in Sydney. And the food that we've had so far has been really good quality and not that different in price from the UK. So it's been an excellent experience. And tomorrow is something I'm really looking forward to, which is the Australia Zoo, because I was a big fan of Steve Irwin, God rest him. And so I'm going to go and see some of those 20-foot crocodiles. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I'll see from a safe distance a king brown. Because I remember in Singapore watching a show put together with king cobras, 14-foot long snakes that can stand and stare a 6-foot man right in the eye. And these guys were doing this kind of kung fu show with these amazing snakes. And the biggest venomous snake out here, and, you know, a highly dangerous snake, is the king brown. I'm pretty sure no one's going to be doing any shows with them, but I'm hoping to see them in a safe manner tomorrow, along with koalas, wallabies, wombats, kangaroos, red and grey, maybe some camels, although I've seen enough camels to last a lifetime.
I was going to say, yeah, like you're in the Middle East, I think that's enough, yeah.
Yeah, but on that note, of course, I mean, I'm feeling a bit on top now, and I noticed that Ned didn't like my new hat.
Yeah, see, he had a thing or two to say about it, thing or two to say about your hat.
He did, yes. Didn't he? I bought him a really nice T-shirt, and since I bought that before I heard the podcast, and now I'm hoping it's too small. So
I'm sure he'll listen to this in the drive up to I forget where he said he was going, but it's just south of where Scotland is. I can't remember exactly where he said he was going
to
go.
He's going to Lancashire. He's going to Blackpool, the home dancing.
Yeah,
hopefully he'll hear this. I hope they have a lovely time. We thought about them on the plane this evening, and said, "Oh, I wonder when that is." We knew it was sometime around about now. So, I think we're all having a great time at the moment. It's obviously the early part of the year to have your vacation or holiday, as we like to call it. But yeah, we're having a wonderful time and really enjoying ourselves out here in Australia.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're having a good time. It was great to sit down and catch up with you. And actually, we had a short call yesterday to discuss just the time today. We haven't actually discussed any of the stuff that you brought up today. So it was great to touch base and hear about the time. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, one thing from that I noticed from Twitter, obviously I follow Andrew Bridgeton on Twitter, and the Association of Australian General Practitioners have put a report out that came out either today or yesterday, and it was saying how there is no such thing as long COVID. It's long vaccination and the effects that people are having, which they've been diagnosed as long COVID, are actually the effects of repeated vaccination and boosters. It also highlights the increase in myocarditis in people of a certain age group. So the cat is, even if it's not fully out of the bag, it's got one paw out and it's flexing those claws. That was good news today to see that on X. And there's a link from Andrew Bridgeton's Twitter X feed directly to the report, which is, as I say, from the Australian Association of General Practitioners. So their day-to-day doctors have got together and written a report from their studies and from the data that they have. So other than that, over to you.
Well, we will go ahead and jump out of here, this call. But like I said, it was great to hear from you. I'm sure we'll talk again before you head back. I'll be in touch, and we'll see if we can have a call or something next week or something like that when you get back to Sydney. I want to hear about your opera house trip.
Okay, mate, we'll do. Thanks very much. Thanks, listeners. Everyone, enjoy the rest of the spring.
Very well. It's been an absolute pleasure, my friend. I will speak to you next week. Thank you for being here, and thank you to all the listeners. God bless everyone, and have a great evening.